This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hour number two of the Lombardi Line. We're back from downtown Las Vegas, Circa Sportsbook Studio. I'm Ben Wilson in for Femi today. Mike Palm, VP of Operations for Circa. Golden Gate in the D is here. We have a fun hour number two coming up, Mike. Frank Schwab from Yahoo Sports. Oh. Part of, we did not get the name in hour number one. What is the official, the title of your panel?
It's always called Circa Football Preview Panel, hosted by Mike Palm.
Hosted by Mike Palm. Yeah. That's this guy.
Now, it's not as snappy as the Ortega headlines. By the way, no. A-minus on the headlines today.
Those are really good headlines.
So I only include the minus because there was only four instead of five.
Okay.
Yeah.
Brian says, understood. Brian Ortega, our producer, behind the glass at the Dakota. Dakota as well, JB, Chris, a whole crew here today helping us out behind the scenes at our Circus Sportsbook studio. We'll talk to Frank in a little bit. Some brief Olympic updates. They are into extra time. U.S. Women's National Team against Japan. Quarterfinals of the Olympic Games. U.S., they were $1.55 to win. -155, Mike, to win in regulation. Did not happen. A nice winner for you on the under 2.5 that was never a sweat. And I saw one of those passing heat maps. U.S. completed like three passes in the box the entire match. I mean, it was a joke. Japan, really good defensive team. They've just parked the bus, though, for 90 minutes.
I would love it. If they get to penalties, got a shot?
Exactly. Yeah,
right?
That's the strategy.
I mean,
Japan knows there's really not much in this game from an offensive perspective for them. So they've just been playing quality defense. And now the U.S., after a disastrous previous Olympics, new coaching regime in, they cleared house, a lot of new players. This is really the first big test now as they go to extra time here in a nil-nil there. Mm. Xander Schauffele still one-shot lead in the Olympic golf as well, about a +110 favorite. Scottie Scheffler just gets into the clubhouse at 10 under par. He is tied with Rory McIlroy, four back, tied for sixth. Excited for what should be a great Sunday in the Olympic golf. John Rahm a shot back there at 13 under par as well, the second favorite on the odds board. And in about 15 minutes, we'll get the U.S. men's team going off on the basketball. 35-point favorites. It opened out to 36 against Puerto Rico. That will be starting there in 15 minutes, final group stage.
I want to get your thoughts before we go to this on the men's gold medal match.
Yeah, for the tennis.
Yes.
You're talking about.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yes, Novak Djokovic. What an outstanding match. Novak Djokovic and Carlos Alcaraz goes tomorrow. It's traditionally, so the last time that these two met at Roland Garros when Djokovic was this heavy of a dog, which was 2 years ago, Djokovic was, I want to say, +190 against Alcaraz. I remember at that time, Djokovic, we had not seen any sort of really fall off. It was more the expectation that Alcaraz was ready to ascend, firmly take the throne from Rafa as the next king of clay. And Djokovic won that match. Alcaraz cramped in the match. He admitted after he was too hyped up. He didn't control his emotions very well. Djokovic won that match, that was the semis, ended up winning the French Open handily in the final. This is a lot different now. And the price, while Djokovic is in a similar price point as he was 2 years ago, it's probably a lot fairer, Mike, now, the price point with Alcaraz being about a $2 favorite than it was 2 years ago. Not to the degree where I'd say there's value laying a big price with Carlos Alcaraz. This is only best of three-set tennis, so it's not like Djokovic can just use his supreme fitness levels to just wear down an Alcaraz, who's improved a lot in that regard. But clearly Alcaraz has been in much better form after being shaky through the spring, the late hard court season into the grass season. Alcaraz, was so good, though, going back-to-back at Wimbledon, and no reason to believe that Alcaraz will not have the upper hand in that best of three tomorrow, even though Djokovic has been able to get by so far.
A really important match, more important to Djokovic.
It is.
I don't know, does motivation matter when you get to a gold medal match? But in terms of legacy, to have that gold medal in his legacy, clearly he is not at the peak, and Alcaraz is still ascending. And, the thought that Alcaraz will be as good as the big three were or better through the course of time, who knows? Who will step up to challenge him during his prime years, right? They had each other. Who will step up to challenge him? And I'm not saying Djokovic is done, but he's not at the peak right now. But like yesterday against Musetti, the difference, I think, is the mental game of these guys that are at the top.
100%.
Where these, Musetti's serving 4-5 and gets broken and then just,
Musetti had a three. We were watching this. You had Musetti yesterday. There's a stretcher, Musetti. Musetti goes tweener lob. Again, this is an Olympic semifinal match. You're going tweener lob. Shaky wing forehand that you blast 5 feet past the baseline, and then a cross-court backhand drop shot that had no chance. That's exactly what we're talking about here with the mentality. And Alcaraz is basically Alcaraz and Sinner right now, that you feel like mentally are at the point where they can handle anything that Djokovic will throw at them. This opened in the Alcaraz minus 225 range up to minus 250. I understand the line move. I wouldn't say there's really any value on that. It's a sit back and watch for me.
Is there a world where you bet Alcaraz in straight sets or Alcaraz in four? Would you look at it from that perspective?
I would not want to go straight with Alcaraz.
Okay.
I'd say Djokovic has enough in the tank to force this a little bit deeper.
Okay.
Is what I would presume.
I hope it's a great match.
We certainly do. I hope it's a great match there. Great weekend right now with Olympic action going on. We also have a lot of NFL to get to. Mentioned Frank Schwab coming up in a little bit. So many different markets, though, Mike, to break down. One of them that is really interesting that has caught our eye here are the win totals within the division here, where you get the six division games. It simplifies your handicap a little bit if you're not wanting to go full win totals. If you see discrepancies in the schedule, rest edge, you don't want to have to dive deep and break those down. You can look at the actual division if you have strong opinions. We'll start in the NFC East, where the team I would be most interested in betting, unfortunately, has the highest juice attached to this, but I know it's minus 190. How are the Giants winning three games in division? And even to the point where I asked Brian Ortega, our producer, did you see any alts on this? Because like a Giant alt under 1.5 at plus money would be a lot more appealing were you to find it. But that's the number on the screen right now, 2.5.
It's an interesting way to look at it. So of the 16 bets that are presented on the screen, actually 32, because they're all two-way bets, right?
Correct, yep.
The bet I like the most is in the NFC East, and it's a corollary of what you're saying. It's actually the Commanders over 2.5 at even money, because I do think they'll beat the Giants twice and steal at least one of the other four games. They play the Reds. They play the Eagles very well. They always seem to play them competitively, and I think they give Dallas problems even on the road. But I like the Commanders over a lot.
It's a way of fading the Giants, but
it's also set in they're going to sweep the Giants. It's kind of a they're going to sweep the Giants bet, which the Giants would be they're going to get swept by the Commanders bet going under 2.5. Right,
100%. Yeah. If you found a flat 2 on the Giants, usually you say win totals in general worth around 70 cents or so. Even if I could find a 2, Mike, and lay minus 120.
You said you had them rated 32nd.
I have them I have the Giants my dead last power rated team.
Is 31 New England or Denver?
Denver I had just slightly lower than New England.
So is Denver the 31 and New England is 30? Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I just assumed like most people, New England would be dead last.
We're going to talk to Frank Schwab coming up here in 22 minutes about his top 10 power rankings. Yeah. Just a little tease. Did you differ much with Frank on the Packers? I was surprised at his Packers power rating. Frank's a Wisconsin guy. Lives in Denver, but a Wisconsin guy.
It's funny. Frank and I had the exact same rating on Green Bay.
Nine.
I have him 9. Yeah.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. I would have bet the no on that.
You would have bet the no. We differ.
Brian Ortega, do you have them 9th as well? There you go.
Brian Ortega, Packer shareholder.
Double owner.
Double owner. He's going to get the private jet and head out to... The family night scrimmage coming up shortly. I did not have Detroit in my top 5. That was the biggest difference I had with Frank Schwab, who has, I think, the biggest headline on Frank's. We'll really want to get Frank's thoughts. Excited to talk on the Lions because he has Detroit number 2 in the NFL. Not NFC, but NFL, behind only Kansas City.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's the difference I have so far. As far as NFC North is hard to really feel like you have a lot of conviction on simply because of the strength of the division. Like, I would love to get there on a Vikings team that I'm higher on in the market to start the year, Mike, at plus 110. But, there's a world in which the Vikings are good this year, and they win 2 division games.
Would you say, in handicapping the 2.5, that you assume a split with the Bears? And I only say this because they're so bad every year at Soldier Field. That's their house of horrors. I've lost so much money over the years betting the Vikings on the road. Remember the Cousins game where they scored like 6 points and the receivers all called him out after the game? And then he goes, I watched the tape. They were right. I mean, it's always top there.
It's basically like in the 90s when the Packers could not win at the Metrodome, no matter how bad the Vikings were and how good the Packers were. It's sort of like that same corollary now with Minnesota. So, yeah, to me, hard to feel good about a bet in the NFC North. I'd say the only other one on of all four NFC divisions that jumped out to me, Mike, would have been the Carolina over 2.5. You're getting plus 125 in what is clearly the worst division in football. Even just to hold serve and, you know, win, get three games at home against Atlanta, Tampa Bay, New Orleans. And it's not out of the question for Carolina to, you know, pull off a sweep if either Tampa or New Orleans is way, way worse than we think.
You know, I looked at in this division, the only one I looked at, but I haven't didn't bet or really probably won't bet. But at plus 155, the Saints under 2.5 is intriguing to me.
A lot of variance on that team. And you're talking about Dennis Allen still
Dennis
there.
Dennis Allen. I still think he should be the solid favorite to be first coach out. I think you start with the people you thought were going to get fired last year, right? When in that market,
who didn't? Yes.
I know you're always looking for a longer shot, and you know maybe it's McCarthy, and because he's a lame duck, it would seem right now in Dallas, or maybe Sirianni because of the way things kind of evolved. But I think it starts and ends with Dennis Allen in that market. I don't get the love there. I clearly believe the Buccaneers are better than the Saints, and yet in many. They're rated equally in many respects. Not in this particular market, although the minus 200 and plus 150 is pretty close on that game difference.
Yeah, I have New Orleans a bottom 10 team going into the year. 24th for me, Atlanta. Atlanta is like rightful favorite, yet I don't think anybody's really necessarily excited about still a lot of roster holes for them, despite bringing in Kirk Cousins there at quarterback. Have a lot to talk about with Frank Schwab a little bit later. He has his top 10 power ratings. Excited to get into that in about 20 minutes. We'll also break down the quarterbacks that, since our last weekend show, have now gotten their extensions and will be in their homes for the next few years. We'll break those quarterbacks down and the respective teams that they quarterback when we come back here on the Lombardi Line. Are you ready to up your game this football season? Dive into the action with VSiN's college and NFL betting guides. Whether you're gearing up for college matchups or the NFL grind, our expert insights, stats, and predictions are your ultimate playbook for success. And for just $175, you can score VSiN Pro Access until the Super Bowl. That's right, all the tools, trends, and tips you need to crush your bets and stay ahead of the curve. Available until the big game. Do not miss out on this winning opportunity. Head over to VSiN.com/subscribe right now to score your VSiN Pro Access. College Football Betting Guide, out now, just released here a couple days ago. A golazo for the USA. Trinity Rodman does it again in the second minute of first half extra time stoppage time, and the U.S. have finally found a way through Mike Palm against the Team Japan. Can they hang on now for the next 15 minutes, secure a spot in the semifinals with the amount of ball possession Japan have had, which has been almost none? I would be stunned at this point if that was not the winner here. Trinity Rodman in the 105th plus 2 minutes.
Yeah, those who have USA gold can breathe a little sigh of relief that they don't have to go. Probably will not have to go to penalties. Oh, look at the VAR.
Was just onside. VAR giving us the imagery here as we watch this live on USA.
Yeah, US. But we can't have automatic first down lines.
But we can't have automatic first down lines.
No.
I know. What the VAR?
Yeah,
Brian Ortega really. He finds it fascinating when the officials
the
go under, to the box.
The underbetter's dream is the next motion is this, and nightmare is this.
Yes. If it happened in the NFL, it would have been great. I would love to bring back the old refs, like to see Red Cashin go like this.
There's no personality amongst the officials anymore. You don't even really know their names.
I was in a game at Lambeau where Jeff Triplett Jeff Triplett would actively fire up the crowd. If it was a penalty on Green Bay, he would, holding offense. If it was on, it was a Packer-Viking game, he'd be like, personal foul, rough of the passer. Like he was just like a, at the circus, just the guy getting everybody riled up. Alas, we have weird takes on referees. Speaking of Green Bay, though, in this last week, since we were last together, Mike, while we had the Trevor Lawrence extension happen early on in the summer window, Tua Tagovailoa and Jordan Love each get their extensions. The poll, first off.
We were together yesterday. Since we were last together.
Last weekend show.
People watch the Lombardi Line Sunday through Saturday. It's 7 days a week of viewing. It's not like it's just a weekend audience. This is addictive television.
But we're on marquee on the weekends.
I don't know. They're interrupted by Cubs replays a lot.
We're on Massive at the Northeast. We have a new audience.
Sling all of it. And 40 more networks to come.
What about the poll we threw out on Michael's Twitter a couple of days ago, which was, besides Joe Burrow, which of the class of 2020 quarterbacks would you rather have? Where Justin Herbert ran away with that, 61% of the winner. On the poll, Jordan Love was second at 25%. He had Jalen Hurts third at 10. We did not, because this was not class of 2020, Trevor Lawrence was not included there. But who would your pick have been? Would it have been Herbert?
I don't know. What's he won? He hasn't won anything.
Michael said
He won the Rose Bowl.
Herbert, no question.
When they threw a pass, when they could have run the clock down to 10 seconds against Wisconsin, and Cristobal threw a pass. You know that well. You were watching. They could have punted the ball and had Wisconsin inside the 10 with 10 seconds left, but they threw a pass. They completed it and won the game. I think it was the first time I did know hyperbole was that time, because that was like rank number 3. And it was also that crazy Bills-Texans wild card game where it was all the hijinks.
That was when Ron Winter – no, was it Ron? No, sorry, Tony Correnti. Called a safety on the first play of the game.
He called a touchdown the other way, then a safety, and the alternate official had to come out and explain to him what a touchback was. That was
True
Tony
Corrin.
Tony was the headline there.
It was Tony.
There was another play clock violation in overtime in that game. Remember?
Yes. I had Bills plus a 3. Yeah. I'm still mad that was a push. Yeah. That was a brutal, brutal push in that wild card game. I was surprised Hurts did not get more of the vote. We'll put it that way. Was it 10% on that vote? But for Jordan Love, who now, look, because of the end of season run that was so special, leads Green Bay, should have won a divisional game against San Francisco. Defense lets him down toward the end. Jordan Love, I knew that comment would get you going. Kicker also. Special teams wasn't great.
I really believe they got way too conservative, too, in the second half.
Jordan Love, though, was second on that poll, 25%, gets his deal, and we're asking on all three of these quarterbacks who were re-signed or given extensions over the offseason, Tua, Lawrence, and Love, who has the biggest upside and who was the riskiest re-signing? Love simply because of the youth. I've heard a lot of pushback this summer of, well, it was a small sample size. You could argue that was fluky. We haven't really seen it over a full season. How do you feel on those statements, thinking Love hasn't really proven it yet? Which, I mean, what more do you want to see out of a guy?
He has a big upside, and it's a short sample size. It's both. And yeah, I asked Mitch, do you agree with the contract? Obviously, he's a huge, huge Packers fan. He said no, he didn't agree with it. I don't know. I know Michael's adamantly that he was way overpaid, and keeps saying, well, what if they played the season in reverse and the 9 good games were at the beginning and the first, but they didn't.
Look, as a quarterback, you don't start out making, hot reads at the line, using your hard counts to get defenses to show their hand, making ridiculous throws over the top, as we saw, say, in the Dallas and San Francisco games. And then just, let's say those were in week 1 and 2, and then all of a sudden you can't read a defense and you're a one-read quarterback, which he was when I was at Legion Stadium on a Monday night against the Raiders. That's not how it works. Like, quarterbacks just don't, unless you're Matt Schaub, you basically don't go Benjamin Button. Which, I knew you'd appreciate that reference. Yeah, but that's, in general, for young quarterbacks, it's going to be a pretty natural ascension point as you get more comfortable in the system. So I don't know how you can really take that away from Love. And I'm also not sure, given the part of the contract he was in, right? You're going, that was sort of the make-or-break year last year. Green Bay knew. They made it very obvious that Love was going to be under pressure. He embraced that pressure and handled it really, really well. I don't know what else you would really expect. You can quibble with the amount they gave Love, but when you have a season in a back end like he did, that kind of sets, the market is what it is, and he was always going to get that much money.
You're right. Hurts should have got a lot more than 10%.
Yeah.
A lot more. The guy went to a Super Bowl.
That was my pick.
If he doesn't have that ridiculous fumble, they probably win that game. They were in control of that game in the first half. And then they start out 10-1 last year.
Yep.
And all you heard about him was what a great leader he was. Jaworski always talking about all the intangibles, and then at the end of the year, they're calling him names.
I thought Michael made a really interesting point, though, on why he would not select Hurts, which is that the RPO game in the NFL, much harder. Defenses have honed in on it. I mean, at the same time, though, I still believe Hurts is not just a one-trick pony who can only have success setting the RPO game up for deep shots. And of all these quarterbacks, Hurts has actually been, I think we think of him as, this running quarterback, gadget guy. He's been the most aggressive. If you look at the air yard numbers down the field, he's been really good on deep balls, even though there has been some inconsistency at times.
I mean, do we think about Hurts differently if Kirby Smart's defense doesn't force him to get benched? and Tua comes in that game. Right, is there a whole different narrative on the guy?
Could be.
Maybe. I guess you say Herbert, the size, the height. But at the same time, like the game they played at Lambeau last year, like you got to win these games. And I know they had drop balls, but like you have to make plays and win these. What were you up 24 in a playoff game on the road? You don't tell me that there's none of that falls on the quarterback not scoring in the second half. Do you know what I mean? Is the guy a winner? We'll see with Harbaugh. If Harbaugh can't make him a winner, then it's him.
I agree. And there's a lot of assumptions.
And I'm not saying this year. I'm saying over the next 3 years.
Yeah, long term. As far as the and just I'd say more for the team perspective this year, for Tagovailoa and Miami in particular, you have as good of a setup around you as you could ask for from a running back, wide receiver perspective. Offensive line has been shaky. A lot of injuries there. Miami is a fascinating team because the roster looks really good. They've been such a good regular season team. It appears on the surface again, Mike, like they're set up for a lot of regular season success. It's just we continue to have doubts going forward through a postseason when I'm not sure what that defense will look like now that Vic Fangio has left, now that you have a ton of those key pieces either gone or coming back from injury from last year. That's a Miami team that it's hard for me to get a really good read on because on paper, I should love them, but I just find myself unconvinced.
Well, if you're going to bet them, you have to bet regular season stuff. You can't bet futures because they can't. With Tua, they're never going to win in a cold weather spot. They just won't. If they had to go to Jacksonville in the playoffs, or if you went to a dome team, but when you think about it, is it going to be Baltimore? Is it going to be Cincinnati? Is it Buffalo? Unless they can, you know, get a 2 seed and only have one game on the road, or get the 1 seed and be able to stay at home. To me, it's troubling that Fangio would leave. I think there's something about that whole culture there. And they're happy he left. Like, there's no...
It was really weird, yeah.
Right?
Everything about it.
It's, to me, there's the kid sorcerer head coach. I don't know, there's something about that culture that I don't know if I can put my finger on that. I don't know that it leads to stability and championships. But there's a lot to love about the team, you're right. I like to watch them play.
I assume just going through my own numbers and looking at the roster, I would be down on them just because of all the macro things we've laid out. And then you go piece by piece, and you're like, there's no reason this can't be a top. Like, the roster's top five of the league. It's just so many other intangibles. I'm not necessarily sold either on Mike McDaniel as a head coach. And clearly, when you have a players first guy and then a hard-nosed old-school coordinator, that clearly you heard the rumblings that the players didn't like being bossed around. I mean, it's the NFL. What do you expect? Vic Fangio is a proven guy, and they were happy to force him out. I'll get Frank Schwab's take because Frank Schwab does not have Miami in his top 10 power.
Nor does he. Nor does he have the Bengals.
Nor the Bengals for Frank Schwab. Break that down when we continue right here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back on the Lombardi Line from downtown Las Vegas, where a bunch of Olympic action going on right now. USA women's soccer team trying to see out the final 5 minutes of extra time here, Mike, to punch a ticket to the semifinals after a goal from Trinity Robin, 107th minute against Japan, 1-0 there. And another slow start here for the U.S. men's basketball team, down 22-17 to Puerto Rico's 36-point favorites. You could have got Puerto Rico plus 10.5 first quarter. Almost 10-1 first quarter.
How much
quarter,
time left line. In the first quarter?
I believe 3 minutes right now.
It would
now.
Be looking good then, I would say.
You would be looking good. 3:25 to go in the first there. Jose Alvarado leading the Puerto Ricans against the U.S. Another 2:17 to go in the first quarter. 22-15 Puerto Rico. 0-2 in the group stage so far. Looking to play spoiler there. We go out to our progressive guest line, though, right now. Talk a little more NFL. We teased it earlier. Frank Schwab has his power rankings out for his top 10. Always great to have Frank on from Yahoo Sports. And Frank, we'll first talk about the event that you have. You will be here. Mike Palm, I said headliner. I mean, they're all headliners, but you will be part of Mike Palm's football panel coming up at Circa. Really excited to have you out here.
It should be fun. I thought Mike blocked me, so I was surprised to get a text from him. So it was very nice. But I mean, once we start hitting, once the Hall of Fame game, which is obviously the worst game of the season, once that hits, it is football season, and I'm excited for it. This is going to be a fun season. Going to be fun to be out there talking some NFL football.
Frank, first of all, congratulations on the 2021 Milwaukee Bucks and their NBA championship.
Yeah, like that. Yeah.
We've got your top 10 power rankings here. They're pulling them up on the screen. You've got the Ravens fourth, the Browns seventh, and the Bengals not in the top 10. How can anyone take this list seriously, Frank?
I just, you know, the one thing about the Bengals, Mike, that I'll say is I think everybody, and I wrote about this in my preview, that everybody just thinks about, oh, Joe Burrow got hurt, and that's why their season sucked. Like that's why they didn't make the playoffs. Jake Browning had a better passer rating than Joe Burrow last year. He had a better Pro Football Focus grade than Joe Burrow last year. I'm not saying Jake Browning is better than Joe Burrow. I'm just trying to point out that there were a lot of things wrong with the Bengals last year. Their defense was not good at all. Their offensive line was not good at all. They got it cooking a little bit when Burrow got healthy in the middle of the season. But part of my issue with the Bengals is I don't know if T. Higgins is happy being on that franchise deal. I don't know if Joe Burrow is healthy. We don't know. He even said, I researched this, and I couldn't find a quarterback that has ever had this injury. That worries me a little bit. He'll be out there. Everybody says he looks good. What if he's lost a little something? We just don't know yet. So I'm a little wary on the Bengals. I don't know if they fix their defensive issues, especially in the secondary. Meanwhile, I'm really high on the Browns. I just wonder if the Browns are undervalued in the betting market, and this really, really rarely happens when feelings get involved, but are they undervalued in the betting market because everybody hates Deshaun Watson? Because this team won 11 games last year with Corpse as a quarterback, right? Like, you can't tell me Joe Flacco just found a fountain of youth. I just think that team was really good. You're telling me that Deshaun Watson, presumably for a full season, we'll see. You're telling me Deshaun Watson's three games worse than Joe Flacco? Like, that team won 11 games last year, and now they're 8.5? Like, I don't get it. I think the Browns, if they get above-average quarterback play from Deshaun Watson, I think that that could be maybe the best team in the NFL. They are set up that way. They are really, really good. They just need Deshaun Watson to be above average. And nobody wants Deshaun Watson to be above average because we all know he's kind of a slimy guy and nobody likes rooting for him. But that Browns team's really, really good.
Frank, I want to counterpoint this because I cannot back the Browns until somebody can adequately explain to me their defensive splits home road, how they were so polar opposite, how poorly they played defensively on the road. Can you explain it?
I can't. It is weird. I think it's a small sample fluke. I'm just buying into Jim Schwartz being really good. And the away, look, yes, I look at glass half full, right? I'm saying, look at that team. Look at the splits at home. They're a good defense. I just think that, yes, it was weird. There's no doubt about that. And it's kind of unexplainable. But I just think there's a good defense. Like, look at the talent they've been building for a while. I think the defense is going to be what we saw from the home splits and not the road splits. Look, I'll tell you this, though, on the Browns. I'm taking a stand on them. I have a few futures. But I'm willing to bail on them after a couple of weeks because if Deshaun Watson looks like he has the past couple of years and just looks bad, like he has. Like I'm not trying to revise history here. If he looks bad, I'm willing to bail on them because that's the one variable for them. I think the defense is fine. I think skill positions are fine. They have a two-time coach of the year. It's just what they get out of the defense or out of Deshaun Watson.
Probably smart, too. You look at the variance for Cleveland. You look at, say, an AFC odds at 22-1. Really, really palatable, too, if you're looking at what's the ceiling of that variance. I'm with you completely, Frank. Sort of felt like in the AFC, Cleveland was the one team getting undervalued. I kind of feel like in the NFC, it's Minnesota getting undervalued. Where do you stand on a Viking team? I realize it's kind of the same thing we're talking about here. You know, solid roster, but question marks at quarterback there. How good can Minnesota be as a team that's just being penciled in right now as number four in the NFC North?
Yeah, and the only problem I have with the Vikings, or a couple problems I have with the Vikings, is they play in maybe the toughest division of football. I think all three teams ahead of them are legit. And this whole, like, we're going to start Sam Darnold all year, they're really dug in on this. It's not going to happen, but I just don't think Sam Darnold's a viable NFL quarterback. He's just never shown it. I really like their coach. And their setup is pretty good. Like, we all talk about how great Caleb Williams is set up, and he is. But you look at the Vikings, and you're like, well, have the best receiver in the NFL. Jordan Addison had a great rookie season. T.J. Hockenson, when he's healthy, is a top five tight end. Offensive line's not bad. They upgraded at running back with Aaron Jones. Like J.J. McCarthy would be set up really well. It's just, when is he going to start? I assume it's going to be earlier rather than later because they're going to look at Sam Darnold and say, we're just losing games with this guy. What are we doing? We traded up to number 10 for McCarthy for a reason. But I do think the Addison, I think he's going to be suspended. I don't see any way around that. It's just, when does that happen? Obviously, Hockenson's probably missing the first six games on the PUP as he comes back from the ACL. So I just wonder if they get off to a slow start in a really, really tough division. But I do think that team is good. I think week to week, they're going to be a really, really tough out. Everybody kind of gave up on them when Kirk Cousins left. And that was just the narrative. The Vikings are going to stink when, you know, they've kind of fixed their quarterback situation. I like McCarthy well enough, especially with that coach. I think the Vikings week to week are going to be really, really tough out, and they're going to have a lot of value just betting them on the line week to week. I don't know that that's a playoff team, but I think that they're going to be a lot better than people anticipate. I agree there.
Frank, two summers ago during the halcyon days of the Nuts/Odds On, you identified the Eagles as a team you were very high on and had bet to win the Super Bowl. They win the NFC, they lose to the Chiefs in the Super Bowl. I wanted to ask you, is there a team like that this year? Now, you said you were willing to bail on the Browns, so that tells me that's not the same level of confidence as you had in the Eagles 2 years ago. But is there a team this year that you have that kind of confidence in?
I will say this, that, yeah, and thanks for reminding me that Eagles ticket didn't cash. Like, that was fun. That was great to have that one all season in my pocket and then watch them blow a second-half lead. So I appreciate going down memory lane with you there, Mike. But, yes, I think the one team that stood out to me that I had the vibes with was the Jets. And not that it's some big secret that the Jets are good, but just in – I had the same vibes of, oh, my God, this roster is absolutely loaded. And I've talked about this a lot. I don't agree necessarily with the rankings, but Pro Football Focus put out their rankings of every unit, you know, tight ends, who's the best tight ends, who's the best quarterbacks, whatever. And the number one defensive line for Pro Football Focus this year, the New York Jets. The number one linebacking core for Pro Football Focus this year, the Jets. The best secondary for Pro Football Focus was the Jets. I don't agree with that they're the best at every single level of defense, but they're top five at every level. And that defense is just going to be absolutely positively nasty. The offense is fine. The offensive line has been fixed. Like the Browns, there's just one variable to me, and that's the quarterback. And we're talking about a four-time MVP. I get he's 40. I get he's coming off the Achilles. I get he didn't look great his last Green Bay season, so maybe he's just washed. But if Aaron Rodgers is above average, this team was competitive with an absolute zero at quarterback the last 2 years. What do they look like with a good quarterback? What if Aaron Rodgers is a top-five quarterback still? I don't think so, but I think that's within the range of outcomes. So I think the Jets are the team that kind of gave me that vibes. I've made three Super Bowl wagers, the Jets, the Browns, and the Lions. Those are my three. And I think I'm going to stick with that because I think that those three teams to me provide value and have the roster to win the Super Bowl.
He is Frank Schwab at Yahoo Schwab, where you follow him. Last thing for you, Frank, Mike and I had some disagreement. We had our front page or back page news segment. Mike says, Justin Herbert, the injury is back page news because it's the preseason. I do say it's a legit thing here for a Charger team with a lot of expectations. Where do you stand on the injury that we'll see Herbert miss the whole preseason?
Yeah, I think it's – I'm on your side. I think this is a serious thing because – he'll be back by opening day. I think that'll be, you know, he's a tough dude. He's going to be there week one. But I think it's just like Joe Burrow last year, where everybody's like, oh, Joe's back in the lineup week one. Everything's fine. And Joe Burrow was not right for 6 weeks, and they started 1-3. I can see something similar happening. I was down on the Chargers anyway. I don't think Jim Harbaugh's got his guy there yet. I think this roster is pretty bad. No receivers, no running backs. I think they need some time to get that thing going for Harbaugh. He'll win eventually. I was already down on him this year, though. And then the Herbert injury just adds to that. I just don't know that Justin Herbert is going to be right for a month or so into the season and get off to a slow start. And, you know, all of a sudden those under tickets look a lot better. That's a team I just think was way, way, way overvalued. Did not like the Chargers.
Frank Schwab, outstanding sports betting analyst for Yahoo, and he'll be out here in Vegas in just a few weeks' time. Also a great segment, Mike, because we got to use the word halcyon.
He's the best.
Way to go, Frank. Thanks
Frank.
As always, for joining
Appreciate
us.
It. Thank you.
Every Wednesday. Guest. He was every Wednesday guest.
Every Wednesday. On Odds
On. On Nuts.
The Nuts. Mm-hmm. We have our final segment coming up. We're not the Odds On. We're not the Nuts. We do our best here on the Lombardi Line. Final segment after this. Right now at our new look, VSiN.com, we have all sorts of best bets, betting splits, exclusive articles, odds by state, betting tools, and betting guides. Adam Burke, full Major League Baseball breakdown for the Saturday card. We also have Zach Cohen on the Olympic basketball and Olympic tennis, and full NFL coverage as well. Matt Eumann's a great write-up on the preseason quarterback depth charts around the NFL, which is well worth checking out there. As we welcome you back for the final time here on the Saturday edition of the Lombardi Line, it's final from France, USA 1, Japan 0. That is in the women's soccer quarterfinals after extra time. Trinity robbing the winning goal there, Mike, in the 107th minute. And Most notably, too, not only did the USA advance, where they were second favorites futures-wise behind Spain, Spain are down right now. Spain down 1-0 to Colombia. Ooh. Spain, the tournament favorites, huge favorites there. You could get, even in-game right now, Mike, plus 225 on the draw as they're about to go to halftime. Like Spain eking this out here in extra time would not surprise me.
What's you? Can you get Colombia plus a half goal? What's that price?
Let's see. In it's got to be an regular time. Market. Colombia even money plus a half goal.
I might delve into that.
Yeah, I don't mind that whatsoever. That's not a bad play. And the total right now, sitting 3.5 heavy juice to the under at minus 165. I also wouldn't mind, say, like an under 2.5, plus 190. You get the one.
We got
Spain
several ways to attack this game as we get off the air.
Okay,
watch
okay.
the second half.
I think I'd rather bet the draw though, but at plus 250, than the plus 190 on the under 2.5. I mean, the difference with the under 2.5, you're getting the potential Spain going all out. Colombia gets the counter 2-0 goal late, but to me, that's unlikely to happen.
I had a viewer write to me, a VSiN Pro subscriber. They wanted me to pose a question to you before we got off the air.
Okay.
What are your thoughts on South Sudan catching 13 against Serbia?
I'm a little surprised the line is that high, to be completely honest. South Sudan has proven, so this is not just one exhibition game the U.S. could care less about, where South Sudan lost by one as a 43.5-point dog, but we're never in danger of not covering as a 29-point dog in the previous game. Handled Puerto Rico, who, by the way, Puerto Rico's tied with the U.S. 6 minutes to go in the first half in a game the U.S. have clearly been sleepwalking. And, yeah, South Sudan, this is something that it's been apparent to me from talking with you, Mike, the last couple of days. Trying to set odds on these basketball teams has mm-hmm. been next to impossible. And what you've seen from Serbia is that outside of Nikola Jokic, There's the Nikola Jovic, who's a G League guy for Miami. There's just not much talent on the Serbia roster. South Sudan plays really, really hard, and they're physical. They're not afraid to clench down in the paint and make life really difficult on opposing interior scorers. It wasn't like the USA were just getting easy drives to the basket. Even LeBron James' winner, if you go back to the exhibition game, it was like a hard drive at the rim that one of about one or two people in the world are able to make happen. So I am in complete agreement with that thought that South Sudan... that line is a little bit expensive. I was surprised that wasn't more like in the 10 range for the game today. And that's coming up later. Final group stage match after South Sudan got their first ever win in the Olympics over Puerto Rico. But good question.
By the way, U.S. still a 28.5-point in-game favorite here.
Still.
Up one now.
Up one now. The first half on the U.S. was just pulling this up. The U.S. were 10.5-point first quarter favorites. Down at the end of the first quarter. U.S. in the first half, just updating my odds screen here, were 21-point favorites. First half money line, you could have got 15-1 on Puerto Rico. And it's a one-point game, 38-37. I wonder if anybody bet the double chance, where if you go back to the South Sudan game, South Sudan to win the first half alone was 20-1. It's like South Sudan to win the first half, USA to win the game, you're getting a giant payout. I mean, not at all an unenticing bet, say that, on today for Puerto Rico.
I don't know. That taking 28.5 is not interesting as well right now. But anyhow, we will finish off with some more Major League Baseball thoughts
on
today's card.
We will. The one I like today and on the Garrett Crochet, Bailey Oberfront, White Sox and Twins. I guess the one question you'd have on Crochet, what is his motivation? How does he look like? I would say, if anything, guy's going to come out pitching angry that he's still stuck on this mired White Sox team. It's not like you're going to see the guy just go in the tank simply because he wasn't dealt. That's not really how the mentality of Major League Baseball players, especially top-end ace starting pitchers, works. Minnesota has been very hit or miss, up and down with the bats, especially since the All-Star break. I do like Bailey Ober with the command, especially against a White Sox team that has been so undisciplined at the plate. I refuse to bet full game totals involving the White Sox because of the bullpen.
Oh, what, they give up eight in the eighth last night, or six of the eighth?
Not great. So I'll go first. As much as I usually do not play many first fives under that are below four, in this case, you are getting a plus price. It's heavily juiced to the over. You can get even money or plus 105 on an under first five, 3.5. That is how I'll approach it. I have no hesitation in backing Garrett Crochet despite him not getting traded at the deadline there for Chicago.
The White Sox have now lost 18 in a row.
Yeah.
The last time they won a game was against the Twins in the first game of a doubleheader on getaway day in Chicago. It's amazing. It's the eighth longest losing streak in the modern era. And they're only five games away from setting the longest losing streak of all time. Today, I guess you would say, is their best shot, yeah, because it's Crochet. I looked at it, but 3.5 is too low for me. I also watched Scooble pitching last night. He loses to Kansas City. That was a good pitch at Reagan's, but it goes out. Well, he gave up a couple in the sixth before they pulled him. 5 1/3, I think five earned on the... He looked like he was going through the motions to me. Now, I don't know if he was disappointed he didn't get traded, but there was very little time between pitches, and it looked like he was just going through the motions. Will there be some of that with Crochet? He didn't get moved. He didn't get dealt to a contender, and now he's stuck with this franchise for the next 6 years.
Look, it's a fair question.
I just thought into my mind after watching Scooble start last night.
I see that manifesting more as we get into September. When the White Sox have already lost 100 and they're like 40-110 and it's
their
like
current pace is to lose 123, which would be the worst record of all time.
Yeah. So when they're inevitably at that 40-110 mark going into the final 2 weeks and you're throwing like that's when to me that sort of thought takes over because it's only natural in that sort of situation. Like who would have thought that Moldova would have more medals during the Olympic stretch than the White Sox would have wins since the All-Star break? How about that?
That is wild.
How would you have handicapped that?
That's wild. Wildman Wilson, wild. I have two plays. I'm going to go. I played the Jays. I think this is just too high of a price here with Berrios. The win last night. I mean, I don't care if the team is so disappointed in the season. You're still playing in New York in a sort of a standalone Saturday morning game. And how about this? There's only a couple 1 o'clock games. It's everything's at night tonight. With crazy Rob Manfred in his schedule. They could put Stephanie Kamerschak in charge of this. We'd have a lot better viewing experience if she did the Major League Baseball schedule. Let's take the Jays plus 170. And then I'm going to come back with the Pirates and Mitch Keller today. I'm really down on Jordan Montgomery. I think he had a handful of decent starts. He's been absolutely god-awful for 2 months. Pirates rallied in vain last night to lose 9-8. I come back with the Pirates as a very short favorite at 115 here today.
There we go. Pittsburgh Pirates.
Pittsburgh Pirates.
Don't you also feel like, as much as Arizona, you can say, well, yes, they were the defending NL champs. They have been red hot as of late. All of these teams, even the Mets to a degree, it's been very much a what goes up must come down sort of season for those middling NL teams. Not to suggest that this is the day that it happens for Arizona after a crazy 9-8 game last night, but I'm not necessarily buying Arizona long-term. This feels like the peak of their market value.
I don't know. Interesting that they rallied. They struggled for so long. They're missing pitching, too, starting pitching. I think they're going to be a playoff team. But with this pitching matchup today, this number should be like 135 or 140 to me with Keller against Montgomery. So that's why I think there's value in laying the short price with the Pirates.
Any interest in taking a short, cheap price with Hunter Green now for the Reds day after getting no hit?
He's been good, too. He's been really consistent. Yeah. They haven't scored a ton of runs for him. I looked at him. I didn't eventually play the game. Tigers hadn't named a starter. Rangers hadn't named a starter when we started the show this morning. I don't know. If they had or not. First start for Martin Perez for the Padres tonight, looking to bounce back. That's a big price. But going against a reliever starting for the Rockies, maybe take a look at the run line on the Padres.
Yeah, it would be interesting, too, looking at the Michael Lorenzen angle for Kansas City. His first start for the Royals after being dealt from Texas. Remember, Lorenzen's the last start for Texas, and he's had a good year. Was awful for the Rangers. Kind of surprised, like, how long will he even be in the rotation? I sort of assumed KC would pencil him in as a back end of the bullpen guy who has been a very effective closer if you go back to his time in Cincinnati. But no starter yet announced there for Detroit. Tanner Houck going for Boston. No starter announced there for the Texas Rangers. And we watch now the rest of the... I think that's why. Baseball. They're like, hey, they wanted to let us watch the Olympics in peace and not have anything counter-program.
On serve in the second. Vetchett serving 2-3 in the second in the women's gold
uphill
medal
battle
match.
There. We look forward to the show tomorrow. We'll have a lot more live Olympic action as well as we continue on the Lombardi line this weekend. Up next, it's The Handle, Matt Brown, Mike Somich. When we come back right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.